Our trip around the Big 12 lands us in Ames, Iowa. Joining us now on the program, John Walters, who's the voice of the Cyclones, Iowa State play-by-play. No one knows the Cyclones better than John Walters. John, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. It's great to make the cut. It's the first time in my life I haven't been cut.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah, we've also never really made the cut. So, feel honored about that. No, we appreciate having you on, and it's been fun. You know, last year, BYU being in the Big 12, it was fun that first year to spend a lot of time, you know, prepping for and studying, getting to know new teams. And now we're doing it, and it feels like double because Utah now joins the conference, and double the excitement, double the fun. But this conference is fun. I think I'll start right there, John. We experienced it last year with BYU making this jump to the Big 12. It's a little bit different than what Utah's doing, but none the same. This is a lot of fun, and we experienced just how fun and interesting this conference is. And even with Texas and Oklahoma leaving, it still feels that way. How much excitement do you have for what is to become of the Big 12 conference now moving forward?
I think it's going to be super exciting. You know, it probably will not be able to stake its claim as the best football conference because of all the money and all the resources in the SEC and the Big Ten. But that doesn't mean that it won't be a great football conference. And it will be a very unpredictable football conference, and one where week to week you're going to see results that raise your eyebrows. And, you're like, man, that was a fun game to watch. And I think it's one of those conferences when you're kind of bouncing around channels and flipping through games, and all of a sudden you land on a Big 12 game, a lot of times you're going to stay with it because it's just an exciting league. It's been that way for a long time, and I think it will be even more so now with the additions coming into the league. But, you know, you're right, Oklahoma and Texas had the resources, and so I think people think, well, you know, it's like Ohio State and Michigan and the Big Ten, or it's like Alabama and Georgia and the SEC, but even with all those resources, they weren't necessarily the dominant teams year after year on the field. I mean, if you went back to the three Big 12 championship games before this past year, it was six different teams. So Oklahoma played Iowa State one year, Baylor played Oklahoma State another year, and Kansas State played TCU the next year. And so you have a wide variety of teams that have had their moment and their chance to kind of seize the thing, but nobody's really been able to grasp firm control of it. Maybe Oklahoma on the whole over that period, but Texas, for all the resources, and I've always said they could host an Olympics there with everything they have, they didn't get the results on the field until this last year.
John, I think you touched on a little bit just the addition of these new teams to the conference now. Of course, those are Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, and Utah. Excuse me. With those four teams coming in, kind of a two-part question here. Does the conference get stronger with the addition of those four? And of those four, who do you see as a potential contender for the conference already in this first year?
Well, certainly I think Utah falls into that category, especially with Cam Rising returning. I think there's no doubt that they will be, if not the team to beat, certainly one of the two or three teams to beat in the conference race. But I think the other additions are great, too. I mean, with what Deion has going at Colorado, there's a lot of excitement around his program. I'm sure his recruiting just continues to get better and better. Arizona, what they accomplished a year ago is amazing. And I look at Arizona State as kind of a diamond in the rough. I mean, an opportunity. They've had certainly great moments through their history, but not the ability to sustain it. But I think they're certainly capable. So I think they're all great additions to the league. And, you know, with the return of, you know, a Kansas State program that's on an upward trend, Iowa State certainly has had its best years in recent memory in the last 7 or 8 years with Matt Campbell. You look around this league, you know, some really great coaches. What Kansas has going right now, I mean, it's fun. Mike Gundy for years and years at Oklahoma State. So I think it's going to be a league where you're going to have any number of teams jockeying for position and trying to get into that upper echelon, and any number of teams. And look at TCU a couple of years ago in the national championship game. We haven't even mentioned them. So, I mean, it's any number of teams that can get into that upper echelon of the conference as well.
So many great teams. You're right. I could sit back and make a case for 6 or 7 to win it next year. I want to ask you, what could you give us a case for Iowa State winning the Big 12 or at least getting to that championship game next year? What has to happen? What has to come together for the Cyclones to be standing at the end?
Well, I think they're one of the teams that's going to be at least in the discussion. Now, are they going to be picked the top 3 or 4 in the preseason poll? Probably not. They'll probably be picked more toward the middle of the pack. But when you look at their roster, they have 18, 19 starters returning. They've got a quarterback returning with some experience now in Rocco Becht, a really talented young running back in Abu Sama, their entire offensive line returning, Jalen Nolan, Jaden Higgins at receiver, two guys that had really good years a year ago, an up-and-coming tight end in Benjamin Bramer. And a defense that returns pretty much everybody except for Gary Vaughn, who was a good linebacker and a great leader. But and then obviously TJ Tampa, who's on to the NFL and is probably going to be a late first-round pick. But other than that, the entire defense returns. And so, you know, I feel really good about Iowa State. I think the one thing is the inexperience they have at linebacker. They gained some of that experience last year, but can those guys take another big step forward this year? If they can, I think Iowa State certainly can be one of those teams that's at least in the discussion to get to the Big 12 championship game.
John, you touched a little bit on Rocco and having him back at quarterback. Obviously, he had a strong freshman season last year. Here in Utah, we got to see him do his thing against BYU, had a nice touchdown pass late in that game. I think he went for 200-plus and a couple touchdowns in their big win against BYU. How important is it for him to take another step forward? Because this is a conference where if you don't have a really good quarterback, you're probably not going to compete for the conference title.
No, that's true. There's so many good quarterbacks in the league. You better have one of them if you want to be in the race. And Rocco, a year ago, kind of came out of nowhere as far as, you know, what people had expected going into the season. Because Hunter Deckers was slated to be the starter, and then all of a sudden he wasn't on the roster. And so Rocco got pushed into duty as a redshirt freshman and went out there and performed very, very well, above and beyond what I think anybody could have expected. And it was one of those deals where week after week, they kept putting a little bit more on his plate and he kept showing that he could handle it and just put up a terrific season. Now, the one thing with him is his quarterback's coach and offensive coordinator, Nate Shielhaus, has moved on to the Los Angeles Rams. And Taylor Mauser's been promoted into that offensive coordinator position with Jake Waters, the former Kansas State quarterback, now the quarterback's coach. So a little bit of new, but guys that have been around, guys that have been in the program for Rocco to get adjusted to. But I thought he just made tremendous strides each week a year ago. And, yeah, if he can have a great spring and head into the fall with the confidence of a guy who's had that starting experience, I mean, I think especially at the quarterback position, experience is so critical. And, you know, Rocco didn't have that in his belt a year ago. He has it now. And I think he has a lot of confidence that he can go out there and play well, especially with the weapons around him.
Yeah, you know, it's also, there's a lot of great running backs in this conference. And Abu Sam has a chance to be that next year. As a freshman, he was really impressive. We saw him in Provo go for 110 yards, 2 touchdowns on just 8 carries. We know what he did against Kansas State, 276, 3 touchdowns. But he wasn't as consistent last year. He had games where he didn't have nearly that much production. Do you believe he can become a more consistent running back? And if he does, how good can he be next year?
Yeah, that's the big thing for him. He has to take that step to being a consistent go-to guy that you can count on week after week. And you know, as a true freshman a year ago, that was probably a lot to ask. And, you know, they spotted him at times because they had Eli Sanders and Cartavius Norton, a couple veteran running backs who have since entered the portal because they could feel the footsteps coming with Abu Sama. But when Abu got his opportunities, and I think mostly, you know, Big 12 games where he averaged almost 10 yards a carry, he did some phenomenal things when he got his chances. And we saw him run in the snow against Kansas State and have an incredible day, well over 200 yards in that game. We had the game at BYU where he had the amazing cut down by the goal line and a couple of really good runs that game. But you're right, it wasn't there week after week after week. And I think that's not only his responsibility, but those around him, the offensive line, the tight ends. Iowa State needs to get a more consistent running game going. It was spotty at times. It was really good at times. And when it was, Iowa State was really good offensively. And when it wasn't, it was a struggle offensively. So I think if you were to identify one thing with this offense this year and how they can take that step forward, it would be that, just getting that, you know, it doesn't have to be 200 rushing yards a game, but if you can get to the point where you can count on getting 100 every game and then get the occasional 180, 200, then great. But, you know, not to have games where you have 40 or 50, just to have some kind of a run threat to go with Rocco Becht and keep teams from really keying in on one area, I think is critical for Iowa State.
John, you mentioned earlier the amount of defensive production that's returning on this team, too. And I see a guy like Jeremiah Cooper as an all-conference, just in his sophomore year last year as a defensive back. Is he the leader on that defensive side of the ball, or who do you expect to kind of emerge in that role as the leader on Iowa State's defense?
Yeah, that's a great question, because clearly Gary Vaughn, a sixth-year guy, was that defensive leader for the Iowa State defense a year ago. And you know, the new linebackers, Coach Colby Kratch, even talked about the fact that he was kind of the alpha dog. Even though he wasn't a super vocal guy, he was still the alpha dog in the room, and everybody knew it. And now it's like, okay, they're all looking around at each other and saying, hey, we better do this together. I think that if you were to pick one vocal leader for the defense, it would be Bo Freeler, another of the safeties. He and Jeremiah Cooper, Malik Verdon, all returned with experience on that back end, and John Haycock likes to play that three safety look, and all three of those guys have experience and talent. So that's certainly the strength of Iowa State's defense right there. And I think they can be pretty good up front. They can be pretty good at the corner spot, but you know, we've mentioned the young linebackers, and that'll be the big thing, is if they can take a step. But I think Bo is the guy at the back end, kind of the middle safety back there, who sees what the offense is trying to do and can help identify for the linebackers and help get them in the right spot. And I think Bo is certainly the guy that would be the leader of that defense. He's a senior from Colorado Springs.
Time sure does fly. I remember when Matt Campbell was hired at Iowa State. He had to have been, if he wasn't the youngest coach in the conference, he was among the youngest. And now I'm looking down and looking at some notes here, and my goodness, he's going into his ninth season at Iowa State. Is that correct? Has it been that many years?
Yeah, and the funny thing is, the first six or seven seasons, every time a job came open, people said, well, Matt Campbell will go take that job. Or, you know, and now people have kind of come to the realization that, hey, maybe he's not always looking for the next big thing. Maybe he's trying to build something special right where he is at Iowa State. And it's been really cool to see what he's done. Yeah, he's the second longest tenured coach in the Big 12 among the group that has been within the Big 12 conference, not counting the ones coming into the league, but behind Mike Gundy. And so, yeah, he's proven his point that he is not necessarily looking to move on, but he's built something really cool at Iowa State, because it's not a place with a ton of football history. It's had its moments, certainly in the 70s. You know, Johnny Majors was here. Earl Bruce was here for a short time as the head coach. And they had some pretty good teams during that era. And Dan McCarney had his success, but not at the level that Matt Campbell's having. And what he's been able to do, going and winning against every Big 12 team that he's played, he's won in every Big 12 stadium that he's played in. That's hard, you know, and he's done it in a short period of time. So really fun to see what he's accomplished and to think about what could happen for Iowa State football going forward, because it's not one of those programs that's just going to say, okay, what's in the portal now? Yes, they're going to get some guys from the portal, but they're not a totally dependent team on the portal, and they're really a developmental program and a retention program. And they've been able to keep guys in the program and building and getting better. And that's why they've continued to make strides.
John, I've got to ask you, are they bringing those pants back again with the uniforms next year? The tan looking pants that look like maybe they didn't have anything on.
Yeah, that was part of the Jack Trice throwback uniform. Jack Trice Stadium is the name of our football stadium. And the only stadium named after an African-American student athlete, and he was Iowa State's first African-American athlete, was killed tragically 100 years ago. And the stadium is named in his memory. And the throwback uniforms were really cool. But yeah, they did kind of have that look of are they wearing? But you know what? That kept you viewing. You know, you tune into that game against TCU, and it was a great win for Iowa State. And It got your imagination going a little bit.
John, I've been able to be exposed to the fan base of the Iowa State Cyclones over the past year, and I'm honestly really impressed. Not saying that just because you're on here. I respect the passion and loyalty and the love that they have for their school and for the program. Some of the most intensely passionate fans in the Big 12. I was at Omaha for the NCAA tournament, and I got to experience that. And obviously, they took over Kansas City for the Big 12 tournament in basketball. Just really impressed. For fans here in Utah, what is this Iowa State fan base like, and where does that passion and loyalty come from, where maybe you don't have quite as much of an intensity and love for your program at a place like, say, Kansas, where they've always had great basketball?
You know, I think the biggest thing is just the fact that there aren't pro teams here. Iowa State and the University of Iowa kind of are the pro teams as far as people in this area are concerned. So you grow up, you're a huge fan of one or the other in all likelihood, and that's your team. You know, maybe you have an NBA team or an NFL team, but, you know, that's a variety pack of teams. But on the college level, it's Iowa and Iowa State. That's it. You know, everybody's about those two. And so, you know, I think that's where it starts. But I think the people that have graduated from this university and are spread out all over the country, it's a great engineering school. It has a lot to offer. They feel that connection, and it runs deep. And so wherever we go in the country, Iowa State alumni come out because, hey, it's our opportunity. So we play basketball at UCF this year, and there were probably 3,000 or 4,000 Iowa State fans that live in Florida that came to that game, you know, and they just will do that. They want to follow their team. They want to be a part of it. They stay connected to it. And I mean, it's nothing new to you guys. You've seen it. I mean, Utah and BYU have two of the most passionate fan bases in the country too. So you see it on a daily basis. And I say it's very similar the way that Iowa State fans view their team.
What's game day like in Ames? Is it? I mean, you talked about the fan base a little bit, but what's the atmosphere like?
Yeah, I've said many times we've lost a lot of football games, but we've never lost a tailgate. And the area surrounding Jack Trice Stadium is amazing because it's all a sea of cardinal and gold in every direction that you can look for the tailgating. And that's really one of the things that makes the game day experience so special at Iowa State. There will be 61,000 in the stands. That's a consistent thing, but they're going to be out there 4 or 5 hours before the game, 6 hours before the game. Whenever the lots open, they're going to be there. And they look at it as it's almost like a religious experience for them. It's the whole day. You set it aside, especially with the way the kickoff times are now, where you don't know until sometimes 6 days before you play. You basically just say, okay, all day Saturday belongs to that football game, and you're going to spend that whole day at that football game before, during, and after. So it's a really fun game day environment. I feel like one of the best that I've seen. And when you sit up there in the press box and you just look out and you look in every direction, because it wasn't built in a neighborhood. So it's the Iowa State Center, which was a large area of land where they put several buildings, including the football stadium and the basketball arena. And so because it's not tucked into a neighborhood like a lot of stadiums are that started out at 30,000 and then went to 40 and 50 and are now 70 and they don't have room for that stadium in the neighborhood anymore, that's not the case here. So you look in every direction and you'll see just great game day environment.
That's awesome. Last year, you got to experience the BYU game day environment. You came to Provo. You're making the trip out to Utah November 23rd to experience the Utah Utes environment. What were your impressions of your trip to Utah last year and your trip to Provo?
I loved it. I mean, it's the setting is so gorgeous to begin with. I mean, that's the thing that I've been to Utah for a basketball game when I was calling Drake games. Rick Majerus's team, we played at Utah, got beat like an egg. but the Iowa State, haven't been out there yet with Iowa State for an event, but really looking forward to seeing their football setting. It looks fantastic. Obviously, BYU's is cut right into the mountains there. It's just awesome. And so I think that just – and then on top of it, you have to have the fans that fill the stadium and make it special, and certainly both universities do. So I think it's going to be fantastic. I can't wait to come out and see it for myself and experience it. And obviously Iowa State's going to have to play very, very well. One plus for me is that that game is on my way to Maui for the Maui Invitational next year, as we do basketball games midweek and then come back and do the football game with Kansas State the following weekend. So that worked out really well. I was, you know, if it was at West Virginia, it would have been a little longer trek to Maui, but I'm going to fly directly out of Salt Lake to Phoenix to Maui, and that'll work out just fine the next day.
Well, November 23rd in Utah could go either way. I mean, you might be ready for a trip to Maui by the time your trip here to Utah is over, but nothing new for you guys in Ames. You know all about the winter as well. But, John, thanks so much. We appreciate this. Look forward to you making that trip out on here November 23rd. We hope you enjoyed it. We've certainly enjoyed talking to you and getting to know Utah, or Iowa State, a lot better. Really impressed with the fans, and really enjoy your work, John. We appreciate you, and we look forward to seeing you in November.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me, you guys. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks. That's John Walters, Iowa State play-by-play. Looking forward to the Big 12 season in 2024. As I mentioned, the Cyclones coming out to Utah on November 23rd. They visited BYU last year, and it's going to be fun to see that. And Iowa State, they look really talented. I mean, Abu Sama, Rocky Beck, there's some good players on that team, and Matt Campbell's a great coach. That's one of those games that I think Utah's looking at the calendar like, oh, yeah, that Oklahoma State and Arizona games, those really loom large in September. Mm-hmm. But Iowa State could sneak up on them
100%.
In November. That's one of those games they're going to have to be ready for. That's going to be a lot of fun when the Cyclones come to Salt Lake. JJ and Alex continues right now.